Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Matt Kimmel and Charlie Spears to go through this week's Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining news. We'd like to thank CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner, and Foreman Mining, Master Your Mining, for being the lead sponsors for the podcast. You'll hear more from both these sponsors in a little bit. Before we jump into the show, be sure to check out the Denver BitDevs Halving Party here in Denver, Colorado on April 20th from 2 to 8 p.m. We'll have live speakers, food, brews, and much more. So be sure to check it out. You can find a link in today's show notes. Also, we'd like to push you to go check out The Big Empty, our new 27-minute mini documentary about the Helios Bitcoin mine run by Galaxy Digital down outside Lubbock, Texas. It's a great little flick to show friends and family about what Bitcoin mining really is all about. Okay, you can find a link to that also in today's show notes. Let's hear a few words from our sponsors and then jump into today's show. Hey, listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Foreman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Foreman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Foreman, you get a system that scales with your business, inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Foreman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Foreman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit foreman.mn. With Foreman, you're not just managing a mining operation, you're setting a new standard in the industry.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
Okay, welcome back to the Mining Pod. As always, you're joined by Charlie Spears of Blockspace Media and Matt Kimmel of CoinShares. Welcome, gents, to the show. We are T-minus, like, 9 days from the Bitcoin halving. Lot in the pipeline for today.
I'm waiting with bated breath. The halving's going to be, fireworks on the 19th or the 20th.
I'll be the pessimist that's like, I feel like every halving, It's like the best thing ever. And then it comes, it's just as expected, normal. Yeah. Just another block.
I'm trying to get excited for it, but yeah, it's like a difficulty adjustment, which we'll talk about in a second. It just kind of happens.
It's like maybe it's like that meme of that guy sitting at his computer like this, and then block 8 of 40,000, he throws up a little flag.
Yeah, maybe one
of those things.
With runes, obviously, it makes it a little bit more interesting for Bitcoin miners. You've known about this for 4 years or whatever you got into Bitcoin mining. If you just looked at the Bitcoin difficulty chart, so you knew what's going to happen. But for Halving Day, we will have tons of content on Blockspace Media. So go to our YouTube channel. We will be live streaming. Take that word again. The Denver BitDevs Halving Party. So we're going to have tons of speakers. It's about 6 hours of content. We'll also be screening our new film, The Big Empty. So if you're in Denver, come and join us. If you are looking for something to do on the happening date, you can follow along on our YouTube channel. We'll also have, of course, lots of podcasts leading into that as well. Okay, let's go to our first topic for the day, which we're going to go through a difficulty adjustment. We had our last difficulty adjustment before the Bitcoin happening, and surprise, surprise, difficulty increased. Matt, I'll throw it over to you first.
I think miners are trying to squeeze out, make that last push, get that last bit of revenue before their production just gets cut in half. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think probably we say this a bunch on this show, is that the hash rate we see today was set in motion months ago. So I look at what happened 6 months ago, price is going up. So I think more capital into Bitcoin, which is now realized in the hash rate and upwards difficulty adjustment.
It was a 3.92% increase in difficulty. Hash rate is now around 600 exahash, plus or minus, of course, just because that metric is sort of backed out of transaction speeds.
That is crazy.
Road to a zettahash. Here we go.
You're moving quite quickly. Okay, we will not dwell on that too much. Bitcoin price keeps bouncing around 72K. So we're looking at 420 for the Bitcoin halving day and perhaps 69K Bitcoin. So the jokes write themselves in this industry. Let's go over to BitFuFu, a little industry news.
So the only chart that's pumped harder than the Bitcoin price over time is the hash rate chart.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's over 600 exahash. I'm stuck on the last
segment. He's a fanboy.
Move on, Will.
We love Bitcoin on this show because you just pop out of nowhere praising it. Let's talk about BitFuFu, which is a sister company subsidiary. I don't quite know the relationship with Bitmain. As from our friends over at the Miner Mag, definitely go check them out. And they went through BitFuFu's, I believe it's their Q1 report for how much Bitcoin they mined. 10,333 Bitcoin for all of 2023. And then they have 23 exahash under management. The interesting thing here is the relationship with Bitmain. And as we can see, when we kind of scroll through this report, is that a lot of the revenue from BitFuFu's self-mining operations are going directly to Bitmain. Why is that? Well, they're basically using a hosting model where BitFuFu rents rigs from Bitmain and then is sending a portion of those revenues back. The one weird thing about all this and why it's like really notable, besides the fact that BitFuFu is, you know, pretty large now, 23 exahash, put that up there with like the Marathon Digitals and CleanSparks of the world, is the fact that if you go and try to rent cloud mining with BitFuFu, you're paying like an exorbitant cost for mining, like an uneconomical cost. So you see here on this contract for 180 days, if you're going to rent an S19 XP, I think it's looking at like 14 cents a kilowatt hour, which you're not really making much money at that point. So it's kind of interesting to see that they have not only a relationship with Bitmain and they're kicking back a lot of the revenue, but if you try to be a hosting provider with them otherwise, or be a cloud client with them otherwise, there wouldn't really be a reason to do it. Just wouldn't make sense from a money perspective, which makes you think about the relationship with Bitmain a little bit. Charlie, Matt, any thoughts on this article?
It's not good to be locked into a hosting contract after the halving, but it could be really good to be locked into a hosting contract as price goes up. So, you know, it's gonna get lean here in a few days.
My first thought on this is like, BitFuFu is pricing out people from using its operations on purpose, and that's from Bitmain is asking them to do that. That's like my speculation here. Could be wrong. If you're with Bitmain and you have thoughts on this, we'd love to hear them. Bitmain also did have like a surplus amount of XPs. That was kind of the word on the street, and they started deploying them into especially North America over 2023 ahead of their S21 series coming out. I think they deployed a lot of these through subsidiaries like BitFuFu, or BitFuFu would be able to go and find places to deploy these units. Bitmain didn't really have to think about it because it was with a different company, different structure, but they certainly got revenue back from this. So I think that's basically the story with the numbers we're seeing from this Q1 and 2023 numbers is just like numbers on paper representing what the playbook was for Bitmain during last bear market. Certainly a lot of revenue, and I think just continues to show that Bitmain is like the mega octopus when it comes to Bitcoin mining. It reminds me of like the 1920s cartoons of like Standard Oil with like its tentacles everywhere.
Yeah.
For that kind of Bitmain. They have their tentacles everywhere.
If there's demand at 14, 15 cents per kilowatt hour, I feel like I should start an operation out of my apartment. Throw some racks up. I mean,
that's a lot.
That is really high. But yeah, I mean, I think the main takeaway is your point. The fingers of Bitmain stretches quite far.
Yeah, for listeners who are not super familiar with Bitcoin mining, 14 cents a kilowatt hour is probably about double what you should be paying if you are cloud mining or hosted mining. So you want to be around that 7 to 8 cents. And even then, it's like a little tough, especially going to the halving. Ideally, you'd be under 6 cents. So the fact that it's at 14 cents per kilowatt hour means like something's going on with the relationship there. Who knows what it is? Okay, we'll leave that story behind. We're going to stick with our friends at the Miner Mag, though, for the next one. They've been hitting all the pieces lately. Auradine, new U.S.-based Bitcoin miner, just raised $80 million for its Series B. They threw a little shindig party in New York this week celebrating the recent raise. A bunch of different people participated, but one familiar name from the last round is Marathon Digital. Marathon Digital contributed $35 million in the Series A. They also contributed in this round. I didn't see the amount disclosed. Perhaps I missed it. What does this mean? Well, we have more Bitcoin miner manufacturers coming to the table. And a lot of people in the US especially want to buy chips or complete machines from US-based companies. This can also help when there's geopolitical issues, say if there's issues with Taiwan or, you know, there's an earthquake in Taiwan. We talked about that the other week. This certainly nice to have a chip manufacturer here in the US. Any thoughts on this one?
I'm excited to see the duopoly change to a triopoly or quadopoly. I don't even know how it works anymore. But more manufacturers, you know, I want to say it feels like this time may be different. This seems to have buy-in from reputable, experienced operators, notably Marathon. And this is a well-capitalized company. And I have seen some reviews from some people I think who can be trusted that this is a performant machine. So that's really exciting to see. And then very optimistic that it's manufactured domestically here in the US. That cannot be overstated going into the latter half of this decade, that we see another ASIC fabrication and manufacturer stateside.
They're claiming to have 200 million in sales already, like in the pipeline, which is a lot. From the miners I've talked to, they mostly just have like test units. There's a recent test on a video by Compass Mining that I thought they did a good job with. Go check that out on their YouTube channel.
And they my question back to you is like, do you think that's, if they have 200 million in sales already, do you think that's like public companies? Do you think that's US exporting out of country, or do you think that's domestic sales from domestic manufacturer to domestic miner?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fun thing with numbers like this when you're a private company, right? Like, you can kind of say whatever you want. So it'd be cool. I hope they have 200 million in sales, like, for them and that they're doing well. But I'd like to see some names of people who are buying them. To my knowledge, I don't know of any companies doing it. Maybe Marathon has future orders on the books for this. But I have a hard time believing that cash has changed hands. Maybe some cash has changed hands now that they have to build out units, right? And they say this at the end of the piece, quote, with this new funding, we'll ramp up production capacity and accelerate investments in our product roadmaps. That's from the CEO, Rajiv Kamini. So maybe they didn't need that funding and they kind of got that now. The biggest thing I'm asking about is like the joules per terahash. So the first units that did come out, I know they went to a few different mining companies and they got tested and they were not on spec. And there was apparently a second generation that was supposed to come out and it does look like it's more on spec. And so like there was definitely like marketed numbers and then real numbers that were not the same. And we've seen this with Bitmain, we've seen this with MicroBT and others, they do this. But what does this mean for Auradine as well at the moment? Matt?
I'm glad you brought up Marathon because I think it's really interesting that they are strong investors in this. We've seen Marathon basically try to get into like private transaction flow with their Slipstream product. Now we see it, their investments, you know, not quite vertical integration, but right, they definitely have a strong relationship. Maybe they want some sort of private deals on an ASIC manufacturer level. This isn't something that we've seen in the mining space thus far that I'm aware of. Because really the ASIC space has been dominated for so long by MicroBT and Bitmain. So it'll be really interesting if Auradine really does become another player. Being on US soil, I think, is certainly an advantage because I think miners are very open to such close distribution and procurement. It may be much easier from like a supply chain perspective, and that might lower some costs or at least make logistics easier. So but again, like as Charlie brought up, this seems promising, but we've seen in the past things like this flop. Like Intel tried, a major corporation, they tried. Like the ASIC manufacturing game, highly competitive, very challenging to actually do. This looks promising. I hope for the sake of really mining industry decentralization that this pans out, but the story is yet to be told. Will it to be told?
And Marathon's also like the octopus, right? They got like Slipstream, ASIC manufacturing, global mining, they got Enduro. So they're also diversifying pretty aggressively, we should say.
In the competitive world of Bitcoin mining, one name stands out: CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner. At CleanSpark, efficiency isn't just a goal, it's our standard. Our sophisticated facilities are built and led by expert teams who care about Bitcoin and the communities we work in. Scale? We've mastered it. Our large-scale operations have set us apart in the industry as examples of community-oriented building. Our track record speaks for itself. We navigate the complexities of the new economy with precision and with skill, continuously achieving operational milestones. Curious about how we do it? We invite you to discover the story behind CleanSpark's success at cleanspark.com.
Okay, let me click over to the next tab here. I think we're doing an ordinals corner with Charlie. So I'll pull that chart up and let Charlie riff on this topic, as always.
I love this part of the episode where Charlie just goes off and we get to ask him questions.
I love this too. Okay, so I assume he's kind of a newer face at Galaxy, flexing into the ordinals research, Zach Pokorny. With, I think, a very, very iconic chart. A lot of the big question right now in the ordinals market, you know, market speculation scene is, we now are seeing what you might call like blue chip collections, collections and art and creators, which are iconic of the ordinal space. And the question is, okay, we can see what the market capitalization of like classic blue chip NFTs are. Are there analogies? How high do these things go? We draw, you know, comparisons to the past. And what this chart does is Zach says, okay, let's look at some iconic collections, CryptoPunks and Bored Apes on ETH, and let's just choose what seem to be, you know, decent analogs, Ordinal MaxiBiz and Node Monks, and let's just, you know, imagine, like, let's see if they map over each other as far as, like, you know, overall market cap growth, price performance. And we can see there does seem to be some kind of fractal or kind of comparison here. And it tells a story which reinforces what a lot of the ordinals believers, you know, sign on to, which is these things are going into the $1 billion market cap. So you can draw your price predictions from there. As we know, narrative is equally important to fundamentals in the speculative asset class, and I would love to see it. I think the other part here is that, you know, this doesn't account for the fact that Bitcoin has just a net larger market cap among just its entire asset class, and the fact that there are some different there are some structural differences here where maybe ordinals are the like actual real spiritual successor and solve some of the issues with NFTs that are not actually existing on chain. So I would love to see this data normalized for Bitcoin market cap. I love to see more analysis performed from reputable teams like Galaxy Research. And this tells a similar story as a lot of the ordinals people have been saying, which is that it's still incredibly early in the price discovery for some of these. So I thought it was equally interesting which particular collections that the analyst Zach chose, Node Monks and Ordinal MaxiBiz, because that is kind of an implicit acknowledgement that those are like the iconic collections. So I think there's more, but I would probably also agree with his just intuition here.
This is a hype chart. This is fuels the hype, the fire that's already existing, right?
I
want to point out that this is basically insinuating that the trajectory of ordinals could reach the same speculative fervor that came around ETH NFTs in the previous cycle, which, if we remember, celebrities were buying, there was crazy volume, and I remember the top punks on ETH, which is the kind of peak collections, right, from a at least price standpoint, or I guess floor standpoint. There were several individual punks sold for over $7 million equivalent per punk, right? So it's a pretty major money being sloshed around there. Now, this hype was unwound at some point, but this is the hype chart, right? This is showing the on the way up part, in that the signal, I think, from Zach here is that there is a chance that there's more room to run for these collections. There is a lot of excitement around the halving, not just because it's the halving, but because there's the launch of these rune tokens, which Charlie has talked about a ton, and I'm not going to rehash the past. But there's certainly a lot of attention on these collections and kind of just a broader movement that's been happening that Bitcoin hasn't really seen, I think, since kind of Rare Pepes, and you could go before that to some of the counterparty stuff, but I don't even think it's on the magnitude of the attention that there is now, because speculation has really just been so ingrained in the new culture, I think, of crypto and crypto newcomers. Will, what do you think?
We're not seeing the other half of the chart. We're only showing us the way up. So what happens on the other side? I don't know. Kind of a cliffhanger. I think it's kind of crazy. I mean, Charlie was super early to ordinals. I started picking up on it, I'd say, like, end of February last year. So, like, a month or two into, like, the initial hype. Obviously, like, ordinal theory had, like, existed before that. But it's, to me, wild to look at a chart like this and think about, like, when the first collections were dropping and people were just kind of goofing around with it. And what did it mean? And I was like, oh, okay, this can never, like, kind of catch up to the ETH NFT wave, which was huge. I mean, at its peak, people were opening restaurants in New York for NFT holders, like specific NFT holders, and like dedicated clubs, dedicated concerts. It was on Saturday Night Live. So, like, to bring that quote unquote culture back to Bitcoin is certainly bullish for Bitcoin bags. Does it end in the same amount of tiers as the ETH NFT wave? I mean, yeah, probably it does.
Yeah, but I'll just,
at least it's on Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'm glad it's on Bitcoin. I have a hard time imagining the longer the timeline, I can't imagine these assets outperforming Bitcoin. But that's more of a philosophical discussion on what the nature of non-Bitcoin assets are. The other comment is like, I personally thought the NFT story as it mirrored last cycle was entirely played out. It's not played out. We can see this in the like marketplace activity. And then there's a couple other interesting dials to turn, which haven't been accounted for yet. One is that Bitcoin's block space is finite on a rolling basis. So there is actually a limit to how many of these things you can put on chain. There's not really a limit to how much you could put on ETH or Solana. So like there's actually kind of a natural scarcity to Bitcoin's block space, which constrains the future growth and an addition of these assets. And then also because you have these crazy wealth generation events from speculation like runes and BRC20, where does a lot of that speculative wealth flows to luxury assets? These are the luxury assets of choice. So lots of tailwinds. I don't want to be holding these things and trying to speculate on them in 20 years. I want to own Bitcoin in 20 years. But in the meantime, you know, it's like buying a fun car.
Yeah. I did have a tweet about that about 2 months ago, and I said, like, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it. I thought it was a good tweet. It was like, the best way to like accumulate Bitcoin right now is through ordinals, where like you buy an ordinal, it's denominated in Bitcoin, and over time, especially in the next 6 to 8 months, you're going to see that increase. So like one example is like Bitcoin puppets. You know, a few months ago, people are just kind of laughing about them or like, they're going to zero. Well, they're almost at like a floor price of 0.5 Bitcoin. And for someone who's trying to like increase their Bitcoin stack, not investment advice, but procure some JPEGs, my friend, it is there.
half a coin for a JPEG.
Charlie just rolled his eyes so hard at me.
Stresses me out. I'm going to add the mining element to this, because here's the thing. If this does follow that curve, big if, big major if, not saying it's going to happen, but if it does, like some people are forecasting, like Zach here, what it means for transaction fees is a similar curve. Like there will be a dramatic demand for Bitcoin block space that I don't think we've seen before, because people are speculating on assets with a very finite, Bitcoin block space has finite supply, right? Very finite supply. The demand for these things could far exceed what is actually capable in these blocks. And like, so you have to stack on top of the price of these unique sats or these JPEGs that are attached to these unique sats, the price of the of that collection, of that sat, plus the cost and the transaction fee, which could be even more and could be, it's going to get wild out there. It's hard to honestly synthesize and piece it all together. Charlie, help me here. What do you...
I mean, well, it's like people, we ask, like, who's the marginal buyer block space at 1,000 sats for VBite? Maybe it's a JPEG.
Exactly.
So I think we've done this on the show before, and we will have this next week. We have a show with Parker Barrett going through Q1 Bitcoin data, the friends from Coinmetrics. Great show. And we talked about block space and transaction fees and demand from ordinals. I think like the long-term perspective on this is, yes, there's going to be an increase in demand for block space because of inscriptions for now, but over time it will go down to probably like a single digit or lower double digit percentage of demand for block space, similar to what we've seen in like Ethereum. Where they've had like DeFi and NFTs and ICOs, and you get this stratification of usage for block space where every sort of application on that blockchain will at some point give a certain percentage of fees. And I think that's what happens with NFTs and NFT trading on top of Bitcoin. So for right now, it's going to be pretty crazy, but there is precedent for this, and over time, it like calms down a little bit more, and it's a nice little stat patter, if you will, for Bitcoin miners who want more transaction fees.
One of the major things that I have trouble with is if it's not on some second layer and everything is an on-chain marketplace, which is the environment that we're looking at today, the liquidity of your assets is just not that great, because you have the issue of waiting for Bitcoin settlement process, right? The 10 minutes, at least, if you have a high enough fee. You need a buyer on the other side, and you need to pay that fee. All of those things impact the liquidity of your asset, and that's kind of tough to overcome.
Yeah, I'm still kind of amazed that this does mirror the NFT cycle of 21 and 22. I am surprised that we don't see like structural changes in how the market delivers these things. But here we are. I do think that perhaps economic incentive will force the market to evolve and discover what kind of model actually makes sense whenever we talk about digital collectibles.
Need ASIC help? Check out Bitamine, one of Bitmain's certified repair shops located in Washington State with satellite offices in Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas. PSUs, hashboards, immersion setups, in and out of warranty repair, Bitamine has you covered. Want to train your technicians? Bring Bitamine to your site for hands-on training in the art of ASIC repair, complete with Bitmain AMTC certification. Contact Bitamine today at dan@vmasic.com. Again, that's dan@vmasic.com. When you think of ASIC repair, think Bitamine.
Okay, we'll go to the next and last topic for the day, which is Charlie going through a little bit of stuff on Bitcoin pools.
Yeah, I think this is an underappreciated story this past month. If you go to mempool.space, you have an easy chart to look at the mining pools revenues over the past month. And there's only one thing on here, which is the average block fees over the past 30 days by pool. And if we see, most pools are a little bit under what mempool.space anticipated their average block fees to be by 1 or 2%. And then we see Mara Pool coming in at 12.31% above what mempool.space would have expected them to earn in average fees per block. This is significant. What is Marathon doing, which is different than everybody else right now? We've talked about on the show, they have they take transactions, non-standard transactions directly submitted through their Slipstream API. That nets them, they take a premium for that, and it's been a pretty modest premium, I think, but they now are more productizing it and increasing the premium as per like rolling average block fee rate. And I think this is very, very significant. 12% above expected average block fees compared to everyone else, that is a very, very differentiating factor. And I don't think anybody's like really kind of let this settle in. This demonstrates that it's very profitable to do this and you have a clear market differentiation. So yeah, that's a pretty big deal to me. Also zero empty blocks for the month.
Okay, gotta ask it. When are all these other pubcos gonna launch their own pools? It's gotta be pretty soon here if they're looking at this, right? So that'll be a fun thing to kind of unwind or untangle that spool of thread, because a lot of these pubcos go to Foundry. If Foundry starts losing hash rate, then we have all these different pubcos going somewhere else or could go somewhere else. What does that mean for pool decentralization, especially with Antpool, which we talked about on the show with Parker, will come out next week, has so many ties to the F2 pools of the world, the Luxors of the world, the VBTCs of the world. So what happens in a world where Antpools dominate the outside and all these pubcos are breaking off of Foundry because they want to have more control over what they're going to do with their transactions?
Scenario. We actually do start transitioning to a fees propelling, driving minor revenue. Now, what is a 10% difference of what is maybe under 5% of your overall revenue? If that ups to 30% of your overall revenue per block and you are achieving 10% or higher, above your competitors, like this is now not just a modest differentiator, it is like the economic driver.
12% is a lot.
I mean, then we have oscillating hash rate, right? You might switch off and switch on your ASICs between blocks based off of your mempool. Like, this is a hot topic. The mining decentralization part, fee economics, like this is some spicy stuff. It's going to be, I don't know, if this continues out on a similar trajectory, I mean, these are going to be the major kind of topics of the year, I think.
It's got to be like either these pubco, the large enough pubcos create their own pools like Marathon, and I think it'd be naive to think that the other ones are not doing it, or pools like Foundry, Ocean, Brains, wherever, allow a little more productization of what they're offering here, which is essentially packaging commodity and selling it to the market. And if they don't allow that, then I think the incentive is to like create your own pool. A lot of the templates are out there, right? Like, it's not crazy to spin this up. There's enough people out there to be able to do this. So
I think I'm really excited to talk about this over the next year, because I think this will only increase in terms of just like interesting stuff to happen in the world of block space.
Okay, speaking of pools, Elizabeth Warren went to the Woodshed on this topic this week. Let's take a quick listen to this and talk about how this very thing we're talking about here with pools and transaction selection is going to have implications in the political realm for Bitcoin.
So validators are the middlemen between the payor and the receiver, and they help process crypto transactions. In the traditional banking world, if a bank transacts with somebody who's laundering money, then they are breaking the law. But validators in the crypto world don't have that same set of rules. Are there crypto validators right now that are processing transactions for North Korea and pocketing a fee for each of those transactions? Same for Hamas, same for drug lords and child traffickers.
there's reporting that I am familiar with that's public about the fact that those threat actors that you've mentioned are conducting that type of activity.
Okay, so bad guys can use crypto right now because we don't have the right rules to keep them out. But I think it's worse than that. We know, for example, that Iran, one of Hamas's biggest funders, makes millions of dollars validating transactions for others that have no connection to Hamas or Iran. So if I wanted to send $1,000 worth of crypto to you, Mr. Secretary, is it possible that when I just send it, just to send this, that Iran could be our validator and would be collecting a fee processing our crypto, all of that without either one of us knowing it?
Senator, a transaction like that is certainly possible.
Okay, so Iran, which is subject to all kinds of sanctions, is moving money through crypto and actually making millions of dollars validating crypto transactions for Americans and for everyone else, all because we don't have the right anti-money laundering rules in place. One more quick question. If the crypto market grows and the number of crypto transactions increases, does that mean more money would likely end up in Iran's pockets?
Everything that we've seen says that when markets grow, threat actors use them more, and we should expect that that is what would happen here as well.
Trigger warning. Should put a trigger warning before you're putting Elizabeth on the show. So the thing here, I think, to pull out is when she's speaking about validators, I think she's also going to include miners. And yes, that is how these systems work, obviously. You have a neutral third party that has the ability to process these things. What does this mean, though, when we see these pool template wars that are about to likely explode? I'm just waiting for the day when Elizabeth Warren brings up Ant Pool's connections to CCP leadership. They'll find something, I'm sure. Nothing that I'm aware of, but I'm sure they'll find something to connect it.
I'm surprised that she's starting to use some of the lingo. She certainly has her head wrapped around it enough to be dangerous. You do wonder if she... No, you don't wonder. She's clearly trying to launch an attack with no consideration for the merits of Bitcoin in particular. And I see this as yet another shot across the bow. In fact, probably shot directly at the industry and trying to hit somebody. So we have to figure out how we have to figure out how we respond to this.
Stay vigilant. The armies are growing.
I mean, what a sad note to end the show on.
It's just ridiculous.
It's Matt does not have time for it. We will pick up the political conversation again soon, I'm sure. In the meantime, get ready for the happening. We're excited for it. Thank you for listening and tuning into the show. If you enjoyed it, please give it a 5-star review on your podcast application of choice. Or if you're watching YouTube, give a subscription, a like, a comment. That all helps us out. Of course, the senior producer for the show is Damian Somerset, and thank you to Nick Gates as well. Charlie, Matt, I will see you guys again here soon. Peace.